A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Two guys in their 20s, no experience, no connections, no manufacturing capability, and they land a $300 million Pentagon contract. That's the War Dog story. And Daniel says the thing that hooked him wasn't the guns or the scams. It was the idea that government contracts are, at least on paper, open to anyone who can figure out how to bid. So he sent us this one, and it's a long one, so bear with me, because the questions stack up. He writes, "We've talked before about B2B procurement and the differences between selling to businesses and selling directly to consumers. He wants to extend that to a third category that doesn't get nearly as much attention, B2G, business to government. The film War Dogs is the entry point. Two unlikely entrepreneurs discover they can bid on U.S. government procurement contracts, and, against all expectations, end up supplying the Pentagon. It's based on a true story, but what fascinated him wasn't the weapons. It was the idea that government contracts are, at least in principle, open for competition. Here in Israel, he says, we're constantly seeing government tenders for major infrastructure, public services, technology, construction, transportation, and yet he thinks many people assume these contracts are effectively reserved for huge companies with political connections, or that public tenders are a formality because the winner's already been decided. Then he points out the feature that makes this whole thing weird. Government procurement has transparency that's surprisingly unusual in the commercial world. Governments publish what they want to buy, how much they're willing to spend, the technical requirements, the evaluation criteria, and the deadline. In the private sector, unless you already have relationships or get invited into a sales process, you may never even know there's a contract available. So is questions, and there are several. What does the B2G market really look like? How accessible is it for a small business or startup? Are there realistic pathways for newcomers? Or do most opportunities flow to incumbents? How do different countries balance fairness, competition, accountability, and value for taxpayers? And the big one, is government procurement an overlooked opportunity for entrepreneurs, or does the complexity outweigh the rewards? That's the prompt. So let's actually pull back the curtain on B2G, what it really takes to win, and who actually wins.
The first thing to get straight is that B2G isn't B2B with extra paperwork. It's a fundamentally different sales motion. The incentives are different, the timelines are different, and the thing you're optimizing for isn't the same thing at all.
Say more about that. What's the difference at the level of how you actually sell?
In B2B, you're usually selling to someone whose job depends on the outcome. The VP of procurement at a manufacturing company, if she picks the wrong supplier and production halts, she's in trouble. So she cares about reliability, relationship, trust. She wants to know who she's dealing with. In B2G, the contracting officer's job is to follow the process. If the process was followed and the outcome is bad, they're protected. If the process was skipped and the outcome is good, they're exposed. So the entire system is built around procedural correctness, not outcome optimization.
Which means the person on the other side of the table is incentivized to say no to anything that makes their paperwork look irregular.
Or to put it more precisely, the contracting officer's risk calculation is completely inverted from a private sector buyer's. A private buyer is afraid of picking wrong. A government buyer is afraid of picking in a way that looks wrong. The paperwork is the product.
So that's the lens. Government procurement is simultaneously the most transparent market in existence and the most bureaucratic, and that paradox is the key to understanding everything else.
And it's a real paradox. In B2B, you're guessing. You don't know your competitor's pricing. You don't know what the buyer's budget actually is. You don't know the evaluation criteria. You're inferring them from the questions they ask and the slides they nodded at. In B2G, all of that's published. The requirements document is public. The evaluation criteria are spelled out. The budget is often disclosed. The deadline is fixed. You know exactly what you need to do to win.
On paper.
On paper. And that's where the second half of the paradox kicks in. Because the transparency creates its own barrier, the documentation for a meaningful government contract can run to hundreds or thousands of pages. The compliance requirements, security certifications, insurance, past performance references, financial audits, those are also spelled out. And they're not optional. Miss one signature, one certification, one formatting requirement, and your bid is non-responsive. It's rejected without being evaluated.
So the hidden gatekeeper isn't connections. It's administrative capacity.
It's administrative capacity, and it's the cost of carrying that capacity. A small business with 5 employees doesn't have a compliance officer. They don't have someone whose full-time job is reading federal acquisition regulation updates. A large incumbent has an entire contracts department. That's the real moat.
Let's put some numbers on this. Daniel mentioned the Pentagon specifically, and there's a recent example that illustrates the scale we're talking about. The Pentagon awarded a $151 million contract, and it went through a competitive process. Technically open. Anyone could bid.
Right. And that's the headline. Massive contract, open competition. But the reality underneath is that the compliance burden to bid on something of that scale is itself a 6-figure investment. You need certified cost and pricing data. You need to demonstrate past performance on contracts of similar size and complexity. You need security clearances. You need to be compliant with the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulation Supplement, which is, I'm not exaggerating, thousands of pages of additional rules beyond the standard FAR.
So, the open door is 30 feet tall and weighs 40 tons.
And here's a concrete example of how this plays out. The Department of Defense recently tried to roll out new cybersecurity certification requirements, called CMMC, the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification. The idea was to require all defense contractors, including small ones, to meet certain cybersecurity standards and get certified. Good idea in principle. But the cost estimates came in at $7 billion across the contractor base. $7 billion. That's not the value of the contracts, that's just the cost of getting certified to bid.
$7 billion in compliance costs.
And the DoD suspended the rollout. They pulled it back because the cost burden was going to wipe out small and medium contractors entirely. That's the compliance moat in action. It's not that anyone is conspiring to keep small businesses out. It's that the requirements, even when well-intentioned, scale with organizational size in a way that naturally excludes anyone without a dedicated compliance infrastructure.
So the system doesn't need a conspiracy. The paperwork does the filtering all by itself.
And that's before we get to specification tailoring.
Okay, walk me through that. What's specification tailoring, and how does it work as a barrier?
Specification tailoring is when the requirements document is written in a way that matches the capabilities of a specific incumbent. It's not necessarily corrupt. Sometimes it's just practical. The government has been buying a particular system from a particular vendor for 10 years. When they write the new requirement, they describe the system they already have. The new entrant has to meet all those specs, plus prove they can integrate with everything else, plus show past performance. The incumbent just has to say, we've been doing this for 10 years.
And this is legally challengeable?
It is. And that's one of the genuinely interesting features of the U.S. system, the protest mechanism. If you think a solicitation is unfairly tailored, or if you think an award decision was improper, you can file a protest with the Government Accountability Office. The GAO has to issue a decision within 100 days. If you win the protest, the agency has to reevaluate or recompete.
So, there's a real check on the system.
There's a real check. But, and this is the part that doesn't make it into the civics textbook, the protest system is also a tool incumbents use. An incumbent who loses a recompete can file a protest, and during the protest period, the contract is often stayed. The incumbent keeps performing. The newcomer who won is stuck in limbo, burning cash, waiting. I've seen protests drag on for months. For a small business, that's existential.
So the accountability mechanism doubles as an incumbent weapon.
It's a shield and a sword, depending on who's holding it. And that's the thing about B2G. Every feature that's designed to ensure fairness also creates a surface for gaming. The transparency creates paperwork barriers. The protest rights create delay tactics. The set-aside programs create Well, actually, the set-aside programs are one of the few things that work in favor of small businesses.
Let's get into that. What are set-asides?
The U.S. government has a statutory goal, it's written into law, that 23% of all federal contracting dollars go to small businesses. And they don't just set a goal and hope. They create set-aside contracts that only small businesses can bid on. If you qualify as a small business under the SBA size standards for your industry, there are contracts where your competition is only other small businesses. You're not going head-to-head with Lockheed Martin.
That's a structural advantage that doesn't exist anywhere in B2B.
Nowhere. In B2B, you're always competing with everyone. In B2G, if you qualify for a set-aside, and there are subcategories for women-owned, veteran-owned, disadvantaged businesses, hub-zone businesses, you're in a protected lane. The government is mandated to buy from you if you can deliver.
How well does it actually work? Is the 23% target being hit?
It fluctuates. Some years they hit it, some years they're close. But the point is that billions of dollars flow through set-aside contracts every year. For a small business that understands the system, that's real money. And it's not charity. The government gets competitive pricing because the small businesses are competing against each other within the set-aside pool.
So we've got the U.S. model. Heavy compliance, protest rights, set-asides. How does this look in other countries? Daniel mentioned Israel specifically.
Israel's system is interesting because it's more centralized. The government publishes tenders through a central portal, and the emphasis is on speed and efficiency. The process tends to be shorter than the U.S. equivalent. But the trade-off is that the protest and challenge mechanisms are less developed. There's less of a formal structure for challenging an award decision, which means the system relies more on the integrity of the procurement officials and less on the adversarial check of a protest process.
So it's faster, but with fewer guardrails.
Faster, fewer guardrails, and, this is the uncomfortable part, more room for the kind of informal influence that Daniel was asking about. When the formal challenge mechanism is weak, the real filtering happens before the tender is published, not necessarily through corruption. Sometimes it's just through the same specification tailoring we talked about, but with less recourse if you think it's unfair.
And the EU model?
The EU has public procurement directives that all member states have to implement. The thresholds are lower. Contracts above a certain value have to be advertised across the entire EU. The transparency mandates are strong. There's a requirement to publish contract award notices with the rationale, and the remedies directive gives bidders the right to challenge decisions. It's closer to the U.S. model in terms of formal accountability, but the implementation varies a lot by country. Germany's procurement system is famously rigorous. Some of the southern European systems are less so.
So different countries are making different bets on the fairness versus efficiency trade-off.
And none of them have solved it. The U.S. bets on process and protest, which creates fairness but also creates delay and compliance cost. Israel bets on speed and centralization, which creates efficiency but depends heavily on institutional integrity. The EU bets on transparency and standardization, which creates cross-border competition but adds another layer of regulatory complexity. There's no free lunch in procurement system design.
Let's come back to the entrepreneur who's listening to this and wondering whether any of this is worth it. Daniel's question was essentially, is this an overlooked opportunity, or is the complexity just too much?
I think the honest answer is that it's an overlooked opportunity for a specific kind of entrepreneur, the one who treats compliance as a feature, not a bug. The one who's willing to read the Federal Acquisition Regulation, or whatever the equivalent is in their country, and actually understand it. Because here's the thing that most people miss. The published evaluation criteria tell you exactly how to win.
That's the transparency advantage you were talking about.
In B2B, you're guessing. You're doing discovery calls. You're reading between the lines of emails. You're trying to infer what the VP of engineering actually cares about. In B2G, it's written down. The solicitation says, technical approach is worth 40%, past performance is worth 30%, price is worth 30%. Or whatever the split is. You know the scoring rubric before you write your proposal. That's an enormous advantage if you know how to use it.
But you still need past performance to get past performance.
You do. And that's the chicken and egg problem that stops most newcomers. The way to solve it's to start under the simplified acquisition threshold. In the US, that's typically $150,000. Contracts below that threshold have streamlined procedures. Less paperwork, fewer compliance requirements, faster decisions. You win a few of those, you build a past performance record, and then you can bid on larger contracts.
Crawl, walk, run?
And that's actually how the real War Dog story unfolded, by the way. The film compresses it, but the real guys, Ephraim Dvorily and David Pacuz, they started with small contracts. They bid on things like ammunition and small arms accessories. They built a track record. They learned the system. The $300 million contract came later, after they'd been in the game for a while. The film makes it look like they stumbled into a giant contract, but the reality was more incremental.
Then the whole thing imploded because of fraud. But that's a separate episode.
Right, the fraud part isn't the recommended business model. But the underlying lesson, start small, build a track record, use the transparency to your advantage, that's real.
There's another signal that this market is more accessible than the narrative suggests. Defense tech investors are increasingly funding startups that target government contracts.
Yes. And this is a relatively recent shift. For a long time, venture capital wouldn't touch anything that depended on government contracts. The sales cycle was too long, the compliance burden was too high, and the exit path was unclear. But in the last few years, you've seen firms like Andreessen Horowitz and Lux Capital actively investing in defense tech startups. Companies like Anduril and Palantir prove that you can build a real business selling to the government if you're willing to play the long game.
Anduril's whole pitch was basically, we'll build what the Pentagon needs, but we'll do it at startup speed and without the cost-plus bloat.
They won. They won a major contract for the Army's Integrated Visual Augmentation System, competing against established defense contractors. The market is more porous than the Old Boys Club narrative suggests. But, and this is the crucial but, the winners are the ones who embrace the bureaucracy rather than fight it. Anduril didn't ignore the compliance requirements. They hired people who knew the procurement system inside and out. They treated the paperwork as seriously as the engineering.
The strategic posture is, don't complain about the rules, master them.
That's the posture. And it's not intuitive for most entrepreneurs. The startup ethos is, move fast, break things, ask forgiveness. The government procurement ethos is, move deliberately, document everything, ask permission. If you try to bring startup culture to a government contract, you'll get crushed. If you build a company that can operate at startup speed on the product side and government deliberateness on the compliance side, you have an edge that most incumbents don't.
Let's talk about the reliability trade-off. Daniel mentioned that governments are slow but reliable customers. Is that actually true?
It's true in a way that's almost hard to overstate. The US government has never defaulted on a contract payment. Never. In B2B, you're constantly managing accounts receivable risk. You're checking Dun and Bradstreet reports. You're wondering if that enterprise customer who signed a 3-year deal is going to be solvent in 6 months. With the government, if you deliver what the contract requires and your invoice is correct, you'll get paid. The payment cycle might be 30 or 60 days, but the check clears.
That's worth something.
It's worth a lot. Especially if you're a small business where one bad receivable can kill you. The government is the most creditworthy customer on earth. The trade-off is that the sales cycle is brutal. 18 months from initial outreach to contract award isn't unusual in defense procurement. 24 months happens. You have to be capitalized for that.
You're trading speed of sale for certainty of payment.
Certainty of volume. Once you're in, government contracts tend to have option years. A 5-year contract with a base year and 4 option years. If you perform, the renewal is close to automatic. In B2B, you're recompeting every year whether the contract says so or not, because the buyer can always switch vendors. In B2G, the contract structure gives you a degree of revenue predictability that's rare in the private sector.
I want to pull on a thread you mentioned earlier, the idea that the contracting officer is evaluated on process, not outcome. That seems like the root cause of most of the dysfunction.
It is. And is not fixable in any simple way, because the alternative is worse. If you evaluate contracting officers on outcomes, did we get a good deal? Did the project succeed? Then you're asking them to exercise judgment that can be second-guessed, investigated, and prosecuted. The process-based evaluation is a defense against corruption and the appearance of corruption. It's not efficient, but it's legible. Everyone can see whether the steps were followed.
There's a clinical analogy here somewhere. You're a retired pediatrician. Does this map onto anything in medicine?
Huh. It does, actually. It's like the difference between evidence-based medicine and defensive medicine. Evidence-based medicine says, follow the best available evidence, use your clinical judgment, and accept that some outcomes will be bad despite good decisions. Defensive medicine says, order every test, document every decision, and make sure no one can accuse you of missing something. Government procurement is defensive medicine at scale. The process exists to protect the decision maker, not to optimize the decision.
The compliance costs are the equivalent of all those unnecessary tests.
Just like in medicine, everyone knows it's inefficient, but changing it requires changing the liability structure. As long as contracting officers can be hauled in front of Congress for making a judgment call that went wrong, they're going to default to process.
Given all of this, the barriers, the pathways, the trade-offs, what should an entrepreneur actually do if they want to sell to the government? Let's get concrete.
5 things. First, treat it as a compliance. First, sales motion. The paperwork is the product. Your proposal isn't a sales document. It's a legal document that has to meet every requirement in the solicitation. Hire someone who knows how to write compliant proposals or learn to do it yourself, but don't treat it as an afterthought. Start small and build a past performance record. The single biggest barrier for newcomers is the lack of a track record. The only way to get one is to win small contracts first. Look for opportunities under the simplified acquisition threshold. Bid on set-asides if you qualify. Treat the first few contracts as investments in your past performance portfolio, not as profit centers.
Third, use the transparency to your advantage. The evaluation criteria are published. Read them. Score your own proposal against them before you submit. In B2B, you're guessing what the buyer wants. In B2G, it's written down. That's a genuine competitive advantage if you actually use it.
Fourth, consider the set-aside in socioeconomic programs. If you qualify as a small business, a woman-owned business, a veteran-owned business, a disadvantaged business, those aren't just labels. They're eligibility keys for contracts where your competition is limited. That's a structural advantage that doesn't exist in the private sector. Use it.
Fifth, the real question isn't, can I win? It's, can I afford the compliance overhead? Run the numbers on certification costs, insurance requirements, security clearances, and proposal development before you bid. If the compliance cost exceeds your expected margin on the contract, walk away. There will be other opportunities.
That last one is the one most small businesses get wrong. They see the contract value and get excited. They don't see the six-figure compliance investment required to be eligible to bid. The time to figure that out is before you spend money on the proposal.
We've covered a lot of ground here, but there's one question that keeps nagging at me as we wrap up. As governments digitize procurement, moving tenders online, pushing for open data standards, trying to make the process more accessible, does the accessibility actually improve, or does the compliance burden just shift to a different form?
I think it's both. Digitization does lower the search cost. You can find opportunities on beta.sam.gov or the EU's TED portal without knowing anyone. That's real. But digitization also enables more complex compliance requirements. When everything is electronic, the government can ask for more data, more certifications, more real-time reporting. The compliance burden doesn't disappear, it just moves from paper to portals.
The fundamental dynamic doesn't change.
The fundamental dynamic, that the process exists to protect the decision-maker, doesn't change. What changes is the interface. And for the entrepreneur who's willing to learn the interface, the digitization trend probably makes things easier on net. But it's not a magic wand. No government procurement portal is going to turn B2G into B2B.
The War Dog story is entertaining because it looks like a hack. Two guys gaming a system that's supposed to be impenetrable. But the real story, I think, is that the system is designed to be navigated. The rules are published. The criteria are public, the deadlines are fixed, the question isn't whether the door is open, it's whether you're willing to learn how to walk through it.
Whether you're capitalized for the walk. That's the part the movie leaves out.
If you take one thing from this episode, it's that government procurement is a compliance. First sales motion, where the transparency is real, but the paperwork is the price of admission. The entrepreneurs who win aren't the ones with the best connections. They're the ones who treat the federal acquisition regulation like a strategic asset.
The ones who start small. Past performance is the currency of this market, and the only way to earn is to win contracts. Nobody starts with the $300 million deal.
As governments keep digitizing, and defense tech investment keeps growing, I think we're going to see more startups treating B2G as a legitimate path. But the ones who succeed will be the ones who embrace the bureaucracy rather than fight it.
Learn the rules, then win the game. It's not glamorous, but it works.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to dig deeper into any of the topics we cover, find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.